Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond. I'm Leonard Nimoy. This 13-part series features many of the best Jewish stories of the past 150 years, written in English or translated from Russian, Hebrew, or Yiddish. Directed by Joan Micklin Silver, our readers include some of the finest performers of stage, screen, and television: Alan Alda, Lauren Bacall, Claire Bloom, Elliot Gould, Walter Matthau, and many more. The 32 stories in our series may at first seem rather diverse, if not incongruous. They were, after all, written in different languages, at different times, in different countries, and with very different literary styles. Some do not even concern themselves with explicitly Jewish subjects. But as you listen, I think you'll agree that all have this in common. Written by Jewish authors, they somehow reflect a sensibility, a voice, a worldview born of 1,000 years of Jewish life and culture in Central and Eastern Europe. And whether through humor, tragedy, or, as is more often the case, equal measures of both, they struggle with a common question. What does it mean? What can it possibly mean to live as a Jew in the modern world? In today's story, author Moshe Kulbach paints a haunting, lyrical portrait of a Jewish bird dealer living among non-Jewish peasants in the remote forests of Bielorussia. One of the most gifted and enigmatic of Yiddish writers, Kulbach was born in Russia in 1896. An émigré, he lived in poverty in Berlin and Vilna, writing poetry, prose, and drama, and teaching at Yiddish schools. In 1936, he returned to the Soviet Union, attracted by the possibilities of a new and just society. 1 year later, at the height of his popularity, Kulbach was arrested by the Soviet secret police. His books and plays were outlawed by Soviet authorities for the next 16 years, and he himself was never heard from again. Munya, the Bird Dealer, by Moshe Kulbach. Our reader is Alan Alda.
Munya bred and sold birds. His moldy little house, covered with moss and sprouting with slippery little mushrooms, had gradually acquired the appearance of a chicken coop. The pigeons had sprinkled the walls, shelves, and tables with a thin coat of chalk. There was a smell of mildew and bird droppings, and the small, dirty window panes admitted a sparse, cold, leaden light. From cages of every description came a continual shrill chirping. There was a hopping behind the wires and a tapping of beaks against various tin lids and other objects. Munya lounged on his heavy leather seat, crawled into the pigeons' cages, felt them with his hands, blew into their feathers, and quietly paired the various birds. Gentle, tiny canaries, yellow as lemons, sang in little cages. Pigeons, covered with feathers and strong as hens, walked about the house. And in the half-darkness, there always sat squat peasants with thick potato-like noses. Bird-catchers come from somewhere in the wet Bielorussian forests. They gabbled, jostled about, took naps on bags of potatoes in the corners, and sucked big old-fashioned pipes blowing smoke like steam engines. Deals were concluded in silence. Plump, red-breasted robins were bartered for broken cages, and finches of the color of dark chamomile for mouse traps or threadbare old hats that had lain in the attic for years. Staring, stupid eyes looked slowly from under thick eyebrows like ponds overgrown with bushes, and occasionally a word was said, lazily and hoarsely, that sounded more like a cough or a groan. Munya shuffled all over the place, occasionally slapping an ancient hand, and this meant that a silent peasant would set out for a birchwood next day at dawn and linger there for weeks on end until he had finally lured a squirrel or even a pure feathered canary into a cage. Surely songs about Munya were sung in the swamps and in all the remote woods of Bielorussia. Hot, still summer days. trees cut out against the diaphanous brightness stood shadowless. Not a bough moved. A magpie standing on a crossbar opened wide its black beak, amazed at the heat. Munya sat on the threshold of his house, waiting for a living soul. But no one appeared on the searing road. Only at sunset did Necha come to visit him. She was only a market woman with a stand, but she had great experience in finding wives for bachelors. The birds hopped and sang in their cages. Munya sat at the table, prepared to listen. Necha talked in circumlocutions, drawing pretty parallels, and hinted that these days a man needed a wife to keep house. She, too, dealt in chickens, and she knew the work they made. Munya sat, red-faced, looking less like a man than a piece of stone. He did not blink an eyelash, but every pulse in his body throbbed strongly, and Necha, the market woman, went on talking in circumlocutions and drawing pretty parallels. The windows grew grayer, letting through the cool reflection of a dreary, distant sunset without color and without warmth. Then Necha took a good look at Munya and moved closer and whispered into his ear words that opened him wide and poured fire into every last corner of his being. Munya was silent, but that night he crawled slowly into the pigeon's cage and sat there till daybreak with his eyes open, thinking. In the morning the canaries sang more prettily. Munya washed himself in a basin. He combed his black forelock, twisted his mustache, and sat at the open door. By noon, Necha, the market woman, had not shown up, and the clay-colored peasants were already napping inside, looking like patched old pots, holding their cages on their knees, senilely joking and chattering with the merry birds. But Munya was in high spirits. He even whistled like a bird, and then he craned his neck, trying also to sing bass, but he could not sing. With evening, thick shadows covered the walls. A peasant as old as the world came to spend the night. He had brought from his distant village a raven that he himself had kept for 50 years, and now he stood leaning on his two sticks talking to the birds. Munya crawled aimlessly about the house. He was at a loss, and he rubbed his forehead. He had just discovered important thoughts going on there. When the peasant stopped his chatter for a moment, Munya beckoned to him and then cried into his dirty, hairy ear, "Is it possible for a man like me to take a woman into his house? Huh? It's possible. Why not?" The peasant hiccuped somewhere behind him. And then he wanted to laugh, but his efforts were of no avail. He looked like an old caved-in barn where the wind blows and bangs the dried boards and shingles. The birds were already drowsy. The peasant, who was only twice as old as his raven, wandered about the house, babbling and tottering, until he too fell asleep on a bag of potatoes. And so about 500 living creatures slept together in the dark little house. In the morning, Necha the market woman came. "Since the birds could not be disturbed, the house would not be whitewashed," she said. "But Munya must hang up a sign. Malkala, his fiancée, must be let know, after all, what kind of man her husband-to-be was. Now, what do you keep in your trunk, Munya?" Necha darted back and forth in the house, peeping everywhere, pushing open windows. Then she rolled up her sleeves, made a hand mop, and proceeded to clean up the place, wiping the benches, sprinkling water from her mouth, beating the pillows. Then she suddenly grabbed her basket and ran out. Necha disappeared like the wind. Munya crawled up to a nail-studded green trunk, and with a long key that hung next to his skin, slowly lifted the heavy oaken lid. Inside were Munya's possessions. Coarse linen shirts with collars embroidered in peasant style, and at the very top of the pile a pair of pressed trousers and even a pair of new patent leather shoes. No one was in the house when he gently tapped the soles as one taps an earthenware pot. And no one was there, nor did anyone even look at Munya later toward the evening, when he walked home from the bathhouse all pink and steaming like a baked apple, with his shirt under his arm. No one turned to look at Munya. Necha, the market woman, helped Munya knot his flaming red necktie. The evening was white. The place where the sun was supposed to set stood empty and desolate behind broken hollow clouds, dilapidated like scaffolding around a building that had never been completed. The two little windows now hung in the room like a useless pair of spectacles. But a lamp was lit, and Necha was helping Munya to knot his necktie. A cool, snow-white cloth shone on the table. The samovar was bubbling. Transparent glasses filled with fragrant brown tea added to the festive air of the house, and stillness also spread over the freshly swept cages. Munya kept twisting his black mustache. Necha was busying herself about the house, going in and out again to see whether Malkala, the charming black-haired fiancé, was coming. The lamp burned for a long time, and Munya's necktie glowed with rainbow tones. And then Necha slowly, with a deep bow, opened the door for the fiancé, who walked in slowly and was silent. Silent. And here it is proper to stop to admire Necha's presence of mind. She at once began to talk with much feeling about the high cost of living. For Malkala, and this should not be held against her, was at first quite embarrassed. She did not even put her umbrella in the corner, as is the proper thing to do. Munya cleared his throat, as befits a male, stared, and pulled up his belt around his belly. Finally, Malkala began to talk. As Necha assured us, pearls poured out of her mouth, while Munya sat, his face on his hand, listening, overcome with joy. And then Necha said, "Munya, you won't be sorry. When Malkala wants to work, she is a demon." In this way, he realized that Malkala would be a good housekeeper. He sat silent, with a sharp twinge of joy in his heart, and waited. A little later, Necha left, and only then did Malkala talk about how respectable people lived and scolded Munya for not taking a glass of tea in the morning on an empty stomach. She even rose from her seat and showed him, pointing with her fingers, how she would arrange the furniture. That, of course, was right. Daybreak was already graying. Malkala sat close to Munya. Suddenly, she pinched her fiancé exactly in his armpit and said, "Munyinka, mind my words. I'll make a man out of you." In this way, he realized that Malkala was very much devoted to him. His heart began to throb with ecstasy. He huddled close to her, and already, faint with desire, he began to dream in a low voice. "Malkala, you'll make potato pancakes for me. You'll buy schmaltz herring at Chana Devara's." And they kissed, too. First to wake up in the half-darkness was the old finch. He shook his warm chamomile-colored coat and gave a leisurely whistle to greet the sun, which had just begun to spray the window panes with a rosy dew. There followed a clucking in the cages and a vague dark cooing of pigeons in all the shadowy corners, and above all this rose the golden trill of the canary. The moldy house was soaking in the endless autumn rains. The roof, like a piece of wet mud, had slid downward, and the crumbly, sprawling chimney smoked and stank. The crooked door creaked loudly on its one hinge, and all the way up next to the roof hung the new sign, the blue board showing a red-footed pigeon with an open green beak and a yellow eye, and under it, in fancy black letters, "Pigeons and other birds sold here." The wind shook the swollen roof, plucked at the wet, ragged panes, and slapped the walls with long, watery hands. Malkala stood at the burning stove. The room was stuffy. The birds were puffing themselves, making crackling noises with their beaks under their feathers. Peasants from the neighborhood sat quietly in their drenched sheepskins, stroking their mustaches and drying themselves. A blackbird had died in the morning. It lay rigid on the table with its yellow feet stretched out and an open, empty eye. Munya was busy at the cage. A hollow-boned peasant with a thin neck stood next to him, telling him something, clucking like a hen. In his canvas breeches, he looked like an autumn scarecrow on a pole. Munya laughed himself sick at the peasant's stories, wiping his tears with his sleeve and heaving on his leather chair. The raven, perched on the cornice above the stove, sleepily turned his back to the room and gave its tail an energetic shake. Malkala clutched her cheek and cried angrily, "Munya, take away your raven! It's messing up my hair!" She began to sulk. Some of the peasants, full of respect for Munya's wife, rose from their seats and waved their hands, "Shoo, shoo!" And then the raven, proud and calm, moved behind the stove as though to say, "You all mean less than nothing to me." But Malkala continued her sulking. She did not talk. And later, when she happened to come near the table, she grabbed the dead blackbird and threw it on the floor. Munya was upset. He shambled over to the bird and put it in his bosom. He should not have done it, for Malkala turned pale, ran up to him, and flung the crushed bird out the door. "Even without it, you stink like a carcass, my handsome husband." That was what she said. Munya raised frozen eyebrows at her, looking foolish, but did not answer. Sheepish peasant eyes also wandered about the room, then slowly grew dim under the thick, bushy eyebrows. It was autumn. The light was clouded in Munya's house. The crooked autumn rains soaked and sapped the last traces of joy. Somewhere in a muddy field, a tree dropped its last brassy leaf. Dirty mists hung over the roofs like torn rags. It was autumn. Evenings dragged, thin and sad, starless, the poorest evenings in the world. Munya sat all the time, peeling his potatoes. The lamp smoked. It was during such long nights that Malkala used to darn Munya's socks, but now she sat with folded hands, dozing and dozing. The wind was playing with the rain, pulling it into streamers and spraying the walls. It was autumn. Munya was sitting through the long, long evening, when he suddenly heard a whistle outside the window. Someone had thrust a finger in his mouth and whistled into Munya's ear. Malkala started and grabbed her headkerchief. Munya asked, "Malkala, who's whistling?" "Look at him, look," said Malkala. "It's Ziskahana Dobkus, of course." Munya felt a bit hurt at not having been able to recognize Ziska by his whistle, but he didn't mind, and asked again, "Who is this Ziskahana Dobkus, Malkala?" "Look at him! Why, it's Ziska, one of the gang," and she was out the door. Munya scratched his head, cursed the world, and then, in the darkness, beat his breast with his fists. It was quiet around the house. Malkala had gone away with Ziska, the thief. Somewhere the rain was dripping into a pail. That night, Munya crawled into his bed, buried his head in the blanket, and lay until daybreak with open eyes. Before sunrise, the door creaked slowly. Malkala was back. She quickly threw off her dress, slipped quietly into the bed, and fell asleep at once. Munya lay next to the wall. He did not breathe. He feared to move a limb, it hurt him so. But in the morning, Malkala was busy. The stove was lit, potatoes were steaming on the table, the birds were hopping and sipping clear water, and Malkala herself sang pretty songs. Then Munya thought stealthily, it's true that she's a demon worker. But she shouldn't be going out with other men, should she? Peasants with ratty beards and sheepskins brought the cold from Yadlov Forest. They came to Munya's to sell late-season birds. Crazy blue-throats tried to squeeze themselves through the wires of the cages. Red-breasted autumn robins, like juicy, ripe strawberries, smelled of bogs and moisture. And occasionally winds entered the house, winds saturated with the winey odors of gray apples. Out of the mists emerged a strong, bloody autumn that lighted winey, fragrant fires in the neighborhood and roared far and wide with lashing winds over every thin, glistening pond. What was Munya to do in this drunken autumn when Malkala, his wife, went out almost every night? Those roaring autumn nights, he lay on his bed like a dog in a kennel, listening for distant steps, holding his breath under his blanket, and waiting. And not until the frosty, silvery morning would he shamble out to the yard, to the fountain, pour cold water over himself, and slowly recover from the desolation of the night. That was how Munya lived. And one day Malkala said to him, "I'll tell you the truth, Munya. I'll tell you the truth. Ziska is too shy to come in." Munya lowered his eyes, thought hard, and said, "What is there to be shy about? I'm not a bear." A little later, she brought him in. The shy Ziska Hanadopkis. He swaggered over, small, with a red neck and a pair of shiny boots, and still swaying and swaggering, shoved a cold butcher's hand into Munya's. "How are things, Munya?" Munya held the hand, heavy as a dressed rump of beef, and slowly stammered, "No complaints, everything's all right. And the birdies?" "Thanks for asking." And then Ziska sat down, sprawling comfortably, slapping himself on his strong neck and pushing his cap over his eyes as if he were bothered by the sun. Soon he talked only to Malkala. Munya went quietly to the pigeons. It had slowly become clear that he was somewhat superfluous here, just as the belated song of a bird in some side cage had become superfluous now in the violet autumn. The two windows that always let through only a thin leaden light now admitted the sparse glow of a sunset on the fields. Or was it a reflection of the red-veined roaring autumn that was trampling the roads with its copper feet? That night, Malkala made Munya's bed on the bench under the window. The fact is, he was a little ashamed when he later went to sleep on the bench like a bachelor. He lay through the dark night, listening intently. What was Malkala up to? Nobody came that night. But Malkala slept restlessly, and at one point she cried wildly in her sleep so that Munya had to crawl down from his bench and wake her. And so night followed upon night, cursed, drained of all joy, as though the pulse of the world had stopped beating. Munya malingered and went to bed late, waiting for Ziska. But Ziska did not come when he was expected. In the middle of one night, he broke in suddenly, wild, carrying on like a goy. He took Malkala on his knees, and they drank, laughed, and even kissed. Munya said nothing. Suddenly, Ziska blew out the lamp, and still laughing, both tumbled into the bed. Munya could scarcely sit up on his bench, and in a strangled, whimpering voice, he asked in the dark, "What are you doing there? Huh?" The laughter stopped at once. A little later, Ziska's voice rose sharply like a bare butcher knife being drawn from a boot. "Don't worry, brother. I won't skim off your cream." And for a long time afterward, the darkness was alive with ardent whispering. It hissed like a snake in this night that lay petrified in the room, silent and blazing like an overheated stove. Munya pressed himself into the wall, stopped his ears, and was petrified like the night, lying cold and rigid for hours like a piece of hardened clay. He prayed for the day to come. Only at daybreak did he crawl down from his bench. A dirty light was dripping from the panes, mingling with the thin shadows on the walls. The raven on the stove flapped its stiff wings and silently moved away behind the cornice. An empty bottle lay on the floor. In the bed, Ziska lay next to the wall, his arm under his head, snoring and accompanying the snore with a thin whistle. Malkala came to slowly, rubbed her eyes, and catching sight of Munya far in the corner, she yawned and said, "Munya, will you please get me a drink of water?" He brought her the water. She drank thirstily, then handed back the tin cup and turned over. The windows were gray like cooling steel. A shabby dawn had entered the room. Munya shuffled over to the large wire cage, slowly opened the door, and crawled inside to the warm pigeons. The startled birds flapped their wings, rose in the air, and immediately dropped on the boards and wires, huddled in pairs around him, and slumbered again. Munoz sat down with his hands on the floor and remained there, motionless, not like a human being, but like a piece of broken gray stone.
That was Munya the Bird Dealer, written by Moisha Kulbach and read by Alan Alda. The translation by Norbert Guterman may be found in A Treasury of Yiddish Stories, edited by Irving Howe and Eliezer Greenberg, copyright 1953 by Viking Penguin, renewed 1982 by Irving Howe and Eva Greenberg. The story was used by permission of Viking Penguin, a division of Penguin Books USA, Incorporated. You're listening to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond, a co-production of the National Yiddish Book Center and public radio station KCRW, Santa Monica. The full 13-hour series is available on cassette from the National Yiddish Book Center. For information, call 1-800-9-SERIES, 1-800-9-SERIES.